Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. Shutruvacha Nathansa Upa Upavracha
Anakansa Upavracha
Sridhan Jana Padansakan start off our day of meditation, because today is Srila Prabhupada's appearance day, and here Lord Krishna is giving us some food for thought to understand that yesterday, of course, we celebrated the appearance day of Lord Sri Krishna. And when Krishna appears, he brings with him his associates, his eternal associates, and therefore Krishna also wants that his associates glorify in a similar way. So by Krishna's arrangement, of course, his most dear associate, Srila Prabhupada, his appearance day is the next day. So, you know, in this way, Krishna has made arrangement where practically we must celebrate Krishna and his associates. He's connected them together, made that connection for us. So, Srila Prabhupada, of course, is one of the eternal associates of the Lord. That is acknowledged. And here it describes some of the symptoms of the eternal associate to the Lord. Now, this particular feature here, that they cannot bear the separation of the Lord even for a moment because of intense affection for the Lord. And here that when the conch shell sounded, that you know, the residents of Dwarka, who were somewhat dejected feeling the separation of the Lord, they become very much that dejection is pacified, and they become very, very alert to receive Krishna in a very befitting manner. So these are the signs of spontaneous love of God. So let's have a look at that. You know, what is spontaneous love of God and what is not spontaneous love of God? Because by understanding that, we get a glimpse into you know, Srila Prabhupada's glories. Because you know, there are today, of course, you know, devotees will offer all sorts of glorification of so many wonderful activities and pastimes and qualities of Srila Prabhupada. And of course, the essence of all of that is that all of Srila Prabhupada's activities, all his qualities, they're actually a manifestation of the you know, pure and spontaneous love that he has for Krishna. And of course, you know, without that pure and spontaneous love of a very intense, you know, very intense affection, Prabhupada says there, very intense affection for the Lord. If that's not there, of course, one cannot imitate. So, this pure devotional service, spontaneous, pure loving devotional service, can be there when there's no traces of the material energy at all, and when that loving mood is very much in the mood of the Brajavasis of Vrindavan. That's where that spontaneous mood of love is. So sometimes we can mistake that even in the beginning stages of devotional service, we can mistake that either ourselves or other devotees may be doing something out of spontaneous love for Krishna, when in fact it's more a spontaneous conditioning by the modes of material nature. In order to understand, in one sense, what is spontaneous or pure love, we sort of have to come from the very beginning to understand what is you know, what are the progressions. And this is described by Lord Kapila in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that you know, the very beginning stages is where a devotee has you know, some service attitude to Krishna, but it's influenced by either the modes of ignorance, tamaguna, passion, rajaguna, or sattvaguna. You know, the lower stage, of course, the beginning stage, is where one's bhakti is influenced by tamaguna. Now, that doesn't mean that bhakti itself is impure, because bhakti can never be impure. It means that the performer of bhakti, they're influenced by the modes of material nature, and they're trying to perform bhakti, which is pure, and therefore it comes out in a, there's a mixture of acting according to the modes of material nature with a little tinge of the, you know, bhakti. Bhakti is always pure, but you know, the performer themselves are influenced by the modes of material nature. So devotional service in the modes of influenced by the tamaguna, and of course each of these three categories has three different varieties. So in other words, someone can be performing devotional service in tamaguna, influenced by the mode of ignorance, you know, to the best degree, or a little bit worse, or the lowest degree. So even, you know, we consider tamaguna, it is, you know, to perform devotional service in that. That's the very beginning. But even in that, someone can actually be really at the, you know, the worst part of tamaguna. You know, there are symptoms of performing devotional service in tamaguna. There is envy. There can be envy. You know, if someone performs devotional service, they have they're doing it out of spite. Sometimes they're serving someone. They're trying to serve Krishna, but they're doing it their service in such a way to, you know, out of spite for some other devotee, you know, or person, and because you know, there's some envy, you know, of other devotees. And you know, so it can be there to some degree, or it can be there very strongly. You can say, you know, some devotees may have that in a very strong way. And there's also, you know, there's a certain amount of strong identification with the body and influenced by the mode of ignorance, so that a person, you know, sleeps too much, they're very lazy. You know, they procrastinate. You know, I know we had some experiences when I was in Adelaide. One of my Sankirtan partners, who he was somewhat influenced by, you know, the tamaguna, and so he had to sleep as much as he could. That was his you know, great joy in life. So he was a devotee, but. You know, he did his devotional service in such a way that it maximized the amount of sleep that he got. So that was his motivation. If I perform devotional service in such and such a way, I'll get more sleep. And whenever he was my partner, so whenever we had to go out on Sankirtan, I'd have to go and find him. You know, so we'd have breakfast and everything like that. And I knew he'd be sleeping somewhere, you know, so he'd eat his prasad and he'd disappear. And this is, we had this two-story building, big building in Frome Street in Adelaide. I remember one morning I searched the entire temple, you know, all his usual haunts, looking for him. And I couldn't find him anywhere. And I thought, there's only one place that I actually haven't looked in the whole temple. And that's... you know, way down the bottom there was like a basement, so it's dark, cold. We used to have the laundry in there, and you know, there was big piles of clothes, because sometimes devotees accumulate clothes and then they don't wear them, they just chuck them in the corner. So it was like that. And I went there and, you know, lifting up all the old dirty clothes in this dark, dingy corner. And there's my Sankirtan partner, you know, lying under there, sleeping, yeah, you know, just to the extent that he would go to, you know, to sleep. And I remember also travelling with Ramai Swami on his bus, and it was interesting because when I first joined, I asked Maharaj Ramai Swami, you know, do you take cold showers, and, you know, like, is this, how austere is this going to be if I become a Hare Krishna? He said, no, you know, some devotees do, but, you know, it's not a big thing. So he just paid it. Anyway, the next day after joining, I left on the Hare Krishna bus with Maharaj, and of course after, you know, about a week, we were travelling across the desert, the Malabar, you know, on the way to Perth, and you know, we had to stop the old bus, and at night time, and the devotees, because there wasn't enough room for everyone to sleep on the bus, so most of the few would sleep on the bus, and most of them would have to sleep around the bus, just out in the bushes. You know, you just roll out your sleeping bag, find a, you know, cozy bush somewhere, you know, just laying on the ground, and then of course at about 3:30 in the morning, you know, then the devotees would wake you up, and we'd have mangal aarti, and you know, there was about half a dozen devotees. And they used to just go way out into the desert, so that, you know, that you couldn't find them, you couldn't wake them up. And then, you know, come prasadam time, of course, you know, they'd come staggering in like that. But so, you know, the influence by the magic of tamaguna. And then envy is an interesting one, because you sort of, you don't expect, you know, in one sense, a lot of people come to Krishna consciousness movement, and they see things and they think, oh, you know, how come these devotees, some devotees have got these qualities, you know, to envy and what have you, which you don't expect to see. But we have to remember that, you know, many devotees are coming from a very conditioned background over many millions of years. And it takes some while before these qualities, you know, become purified. But I remember when I went to New Zealand, and I ended up living there for 10 years as a devotee. But when I first got there, there was an old friend of mine. This devotee, I met him when I was in the King's Cross as a brahmachari. And he was like a street kid. And, you know, a squatter. So he lived in some abandoned building in the King's Cross. That's where a temple was. And so, you know, he never washed. He never bathed. So there's a really strong odour. You know, the odour was so strong, the devotees wouldn't leave him in the temple. You know, not even Bashar, so you'd feed him outside. Anyway, I used to do the garbage, and what I would do is I'd get him to help me do the garbage. You know, we'd put the bags and put it all out, and, you know, sort it all out and everything like that. And then I'd give him prasad, and then I'd feast him and what have you. And, you know, after some time, he, you know, become a little interested, and, you know, I managed to get him inside and get him a shower and get some clean clothes on him and what have you. And then he became, you know, a really nice Sankirtan devotee, very enthusiastic. He's still a devotee to this day. And anyway, there was sometimes, as we say, different qualities, even after many years as a devotee, they can manifest. So when I went to New Zealand, he was there. And he picked me up at the airport, and we were driving back to the temple. And he said, oh, you know, there's a marathon coming up. So in those days we used to sell paintings, and, you know, you'd try and earn so much money, give it a Christmas. And he said, most likely I'll win the marathon. And he said to me, how do you think you'll go? And I thought, I think you're putting out a bit of a challenge there. I said, I think most likely I'll win. He said, oh, I said, okay, yeah, we'll see. That was the end of the conversation. Anyway, the marathon came up, after a couple of weeks. And what we used to do in those days is we'd all sit together before the marathon, everyone make a pledge. So some devotee would say, I'll collect $100 every day. And then, some else, I'll collect $200. So then, motion was there, and then my friend, he says, I'll collect $800 a day, and everyone's all. So I said, I'll collect $1,000 a day. So then, he says, I'm changing mine. I'll collect $1,000 a day. So we went out on the marathons, and we were partners. And I was actually collecting $1,000 a day, and he was almost collecting $1,000 a day, but not quite. And he was getting a few bodgy checks. And anyway, one day, out of desperation, we went to a shopping centre which he knew had been done, by many devotees just within the last couple of days. And he said, I'll just drop you off here, and I'm just going to go up the road a bit and just have a scout around. And of course, he disappeared. Now, so I went into a couple of shops, and I realized that, that whole shopping center had been completely done. You walk in, not you, hurries again. They've been. Like this. So actually, he took off. He just left me there. So I had no car. And as I was walking down the mall, the soles of one of my shoes just dropped off. It was sort of half dropped off. So every time I walk, it'd go flap, flap, flap. So I'm thinking, I don't quite have the salesman profile because, so that you walk into a shop, your shoes flapping like this. And of course, I was quite new in the country, so I didn't really know much about New Zealand. And so I was there with my roller paintings, not knowing where I was, no transport, and, one shoe flapping around like this. And he'd taken off and left me there. So I thought, okay, I'm not going to let him get away with that. So I went into a shoe shop, and I said, let me have a pair of shoes, I'll give you one of these paintings. And so I got a nice pair of shoes. Then I hitched back to the temple, and got back to the temple, and tried to find someone, anyone who was coming in to the temple, because there were no Sankirtan cars there. And I managed to find someone lent me a car. And I drove out, and although it was very, very late, I still got my quota of $1,000, and I ended up beating him, in the thing. But, what surprised me was, here's someone you've helped from the very beginning, to become a devotee, and, some envy, just because, there's some condition. I mean, we all have it to some degree or another, if we're conditioned. But it's sometimes very surprising, when you see that. But it's there, So it's sort of doing devotional service to Krishna, but there's these influences. Srila Prabhupada, of course, you'd be surprised how high up the scale it goes. Srila Prabhupada, he had that envy from. His associates, who were, many of them were sannyasis, and elevated in many ways. There was no doubt they were elevated devotees. But sometimes, these traces can be stirred up within the heart, even though we may have, you know, overcome them for some time. You know, the purification, it takes a long time for it to actually be completely pure. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada did mention, you know, just straight out, he said that, you know, some, his certain godbrothers, you know, his so-and-so is like, you know, he's an envious black snake. Just very strong, you know, that the person actually, the devotee went out of their way to put obstacles in Prabhupada's way so that he would not be successful, so that he would not look good in what he was doing. You know, Prabhupada just, you know, straight up. So sometimes it's surprising how, you know, these traces are there. Sure, Prabhupada had to deal with it. Prabhupada wrote many, many letters to his godbrothers. You know, please send me some, you know, maybe one or two brahmacharis, you know, some radangas, you know, make a little bit of room. If I bring some devotees over, maybe you have some room that devotees can stay. Practically, they just rejected everything. No, I'm not going to help you. I don't. And criticism, you know, very strong criticism of Srila Prabhupada that he had to deal with. You know, so this, so, you know, influence, it's surprising how, you know, these modes of material nature can stay there. We should be careful to think that, you know, I've been a devotee for 2 years or 10 years or 20 years or what have you, that, you know, it's all gone. You know, pure devotional service on the level of Srila Prabhupada is extremely rare. You know, it's not something that can be imitated. You know, it's a very, very rare, glorious quality. Then there's devotional service in the modes of influenced by the mode of passion, where we want to perform devotional service, and as long as there's some particular reward, and that reward can be some facility to enjoy some facility as a result of our devotional service. It can be in a such a way as well that we'll perform devotional service if we get some recognition. You quite often see that, especially, I know sometimes I've had devotees that we might be doing a festival or something, and they've come up and they've said, can I do some service? You know, I do, you know, I want to serve Krishna. And you think, oh, great, you know, they're really eager to do some service. So, you know, you may notice that, we're doing this preaching program, and the bin's fallen over and the rubbish all over the place. Now, of course, they're thinking that, you know, Gangas may have something to do with the deity, so doing service means I'll be seen doing something with the deities, and then I'll get some, you know. So when you ask them, you know, oh yes, you know, we need to clean up this. And then what happens is that, you know, you get the nod at that, you walk away and you're doing something, and you come back, and of course they haven't done it. They've got no intention of doing it. And they've gone off and they've asked someone else, oh, can I do some service, you know, like this. So even though it may be very important, and then, you know, you may see it, sometimes devotees want to be, do service in such a way when, you know, a lot of people are looking. You know, if everyone's looking, then we can do service at that particular time. But when no one's looking, the enthusiasm is gone. You know, there's no one wants to do anything. There's devotional service like that. And of course, we see that, Srila Prabhupada didn't have even a trace of that. He never wanted to parade himself as a big devotee. You can even see that in the way Prabhupada preaches, you know, his preaching, that, you know, he knows that in order for people to actually become, you know, fixed up and safe on the platform of the devotional service, every day they have to be reminded, you know, you're not this body, you know, get off that consciousness of, you know, you're not this body. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada would speak Krishna consciousness in such a way that, you know, he wasn't always giving classes about, you know, presenting that, oh, you know, here is this class on the gopis, you know, here is this class on such and such. He was, you know, he wasn't presenting himself that I am such a knower of the mood of the Brajavasis, you know, I know the spiritual world, you know, I know all these elevated spiritual topics, like that. Srila Prabhupada was quite happy that, you know, that just to preach what needed to be preached. Very simple, sound philosophy, you know, that, you know, that which actually we need to hear. And he would, you know, preach it again and again and again, just to, you know, just to keep devotees stable and off that bodily platform. Because all of these symptoms, you know, when we say that a devotee's devotional service is influenced by tamagun, rajagun, or sattvagun, to one degree or another, that means that the devotees are on the bodily platform of life. We're identifying, you know, with the material body or the subtle body. And as we see, these qualities can be there, you know, for a long, long time into devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada knew that sometimes what happens, of course, is that devotees, after some period of time, they mistake their advancement for other things. They mistake other things for advancement. Advancement means how we're developing freedom, complete freedom from the modes of material nature, and this purity of loving devotion to Krishna. But sometimes we mistake other things. Prabhupada can see it's clear as day that, you know, you're still on the bodily platform because of your activities and, you know, how you're doing things. But you're mistaking, you know, the fact that you've taken sannyas, the fact that you've, you know, got some important service. You know, this is also one of the symptoms that a person is influenced by the tamaguna and rajaguna, is that the devotee thinks the service that I'm doing is very important. You know, the service I'm doing is the most important service. That's actually an influence of the most material nature. And we see that therefore Lord Ramchandra, there's the story where the little spider was helping Lord Ram to build the bridge across to Sri Lanka, and the little spider was flicking little specks of dust into the water to help Ram, you know. And Hanuman was getting big mountain peaks and, you know, boulders and, you know, throwing them in. And Hanuman had a condescending statement to the little spider that, you know, what is this, you know, what are you doing? And, you know, he was chastised by Lord Ramchandra that actually, you know, the service you're doing is equal. Because, you know, that little spider, according to his full capacity, he's serving. And you, according to your full capacity, you are serving. Actually, they're completely equal. you know, one should not think, well, my service is, you know, so much better than someone else's service. That is actually not only actually devotees don't think like that. Certainly, you know, certainly there are services which Srila Prabhupada considered to be, you know, more important than others in one respect. Comparatively, they're all absolute. Every service is absolute. But although every service is absolute, you know, there is a focus, which is a primary focus, which is particularly important to focus upon when we're serving. So, in our movement, that focus is preaching. So, every service is equal, they're performed on an absolute platform, they're equally important, but still there's a focus on preaching. Now, how does that apply? That doesn't mean that someone is in the kitchen cooking prasadam and someone is going out and selling books, that the person who is selling the books is a more important devotee doing a more important service than the person in the kitchen. It doesn't mean that. Because if the person in the kitchen is cooking prasadam, that, you know, who's going to feed the Sankirtan devotees? And then the person cleaning up the rubbish, you know, there's so much mess, paper and tins and this and that, the person cleaning up, and they're thinking, you know, if someone doesn't clean this up, you know, when the preachers, you know, get people to come back to the temple and they see it's like a pigsty, who will want to, you know, come and associate? You know, so the preachers are putting in hard work, and we will keep the temple spotlessly clean so that, you know, the result of the preaching, all of those services are just as important. But there's a focus on the most important aspect of preaching, the most important aspect of service is preaching. So therefore Prabhupada used to say that, you know, there was a saying when the British were building the railroad, the saying is, keep the wheels rolling, keep the train rolling, like that. So that's the most important thing, because there's no use having a train track and, you know, cutting through all the mountains and, you know, laying down the sleepers and, you know, creating, you know, the iron tracks and what have you, building the locomotive, if you never run the train. You know, if you don't run the train, so, you know, the idea is that all of that work becomes, otherwise it's all useless. You know, you build the train, you build the track, you blow up a whole bunch of mountains, what have you, kill a few local natives. If you don't, you know, keep the train running, you know, everything has no value. So preaching is like that. Actually, Srila Prabhupada one time in London, they wanted to have the Rath Yatra. And the government, you know, tried to stop the Rath Yatra, you know, the movement of the Rath Yatra. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, he incited his devotees, you know, that we're not going to sit back and allow this. You know, we're going to fight. You know, and he was saying that to his devotees that, you know, we're prepared to go to jail, we're prepared to do this, whatever. He said, if we create a movement where, you know, we display the deities, people come and see and we collect money, and then we enjoy the facility, he said, our movement has no value. It is ruined. You know, our movement, Prabhupada wanted a movement where, you know, preachers are filled with life to, you know, fight for Krishna, to spread Krishna consciousness in every town and village, every office, you know, everywhere. And, you know, whatever, you know, opposition is there, the devotees should be prepared to undergo all sorts of difficulties and risks in order to, you know, fight for Krishna, you know, to establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, we're not so much interested that, you know, just to make a, in one sense, nice big festival. Yes, we get thousands of people come along, but if we think, well, let us just collect the money and then let us just, you know, now we'll enjoy so much facility, Srila Prabhupada considered that a failure. You know, basically the opportunity is that those people that come to the temple, there's an opportunity there to, you know, help them to become devotees of Krishna. Then we have to speak to them, you know, and try and convince them that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And, you know, whatever funds are collected, we have to use that to then increase the preaching, you know. So let us have Rath Yatra, and let us have book distribution, let us have kirtan, and let us, you know, open preaching centers, and, you know, farm communities, and, you know, so many different things like that. But, you know, that preaching. So, and then, you know, in preaching, some devotees are, you know, they may be speaking, preaching to according to their capacity and according to, you know, Krishna's will. They may be speaking to, you know, some new person who has, you know, they're not wealthy, they're not like a big politician, they're not a, you know, a very famous person or a big dignitary. They're just the average person off the street. One devotee may be preaching to them. Another devotee may be preaching to the Prime Minister. Still, a devotee should not think that one service is more important than another. Now, there's no doubt that sometimes, you know, when you preach to very important, influential people, it's significant in that, you know, it may accelerate, you know, the amount of people who may hear about Krishna because that person is very influential. So, you know, that has to be taken into consideration. Yes, we have to therefore treat that preaching opportunity with, you know, very carefully. It's a very important, you know, preaching opportunity. But then we also see that some of our spiritual masters and some of the, you know, great devotees in ISKCON were not very, very, you know, significant persons in one sense in their, you know, material life. They were just ordinary persons, but they, Srila Prabhupada gave them equal attention, equally important. And those persons now within our movement are actually, you know, preaching, making thousands of disciples, and, you know, so. You know, George Harrison said that someone asked him, what is the most striking thing, you know, that you see in Srila Prabhupada? And he said that what he noticed with Srila Prabhupada, because he spent some time with him, was that whoever came to see Srila Prabhupada, that person always felt that Prabhupada is giving me his full attention, and that person always felt very, very important like that. And that's how he felt, that's how, you know, George Harrison felt, that no matter who was there and what have you, you know, Prabhupada had that ability that no matter who he was with, you know, he would make that person, he would give them his attention in such a way that even if it was just for a few moments, but he would make that person feel that, you know, very important and very much appreciated. So much so that sometimes Srila Prabhupada, you know, he was so expert at that he would meet someone sometimes for just a few moments and then see them a year later and say, oh, you know, Robert has, you know, and he would remember their name and, you know, the conversation they had and, you know, so just because like that. And what was Srila Prabhupada's position? You know, how did Srila Prabhupada learn that, of course? Because Srila Prabhupada, he went to Vrindavan, and at that stage, what happened was, that was, I think, his, you know, the first, I think the first meeting was where he, you know, his friends took him to meet Bhaktisiddhanta, and Prabhupada was bowing down to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And practically, as he was rising up, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, you know, you're educated young boys, you go and preach, you know, Krishna consciousness in the Western world, like that, you know. And then, I think the second time might have been when he went to Vrindavan. I think that was the second or third. So, pretty much none of the sannyasis or the devotees knew Srila Prabhupada, so he was pretty much an outsider, you know, Prabhupada said. He wasn't really an outsider, but that's how he would have been viewed, as an outsider. And but Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, they announced that he would be speaking that night, and at the same or that day, and at the same time, yeah, it was in the evening, you know, others would be going on parikrama. So Srila Prabhupada, he stayed, and he heard. So it wasn't, you know, in one sense. Hearing, someone may think, well, you know, here's a devotee, they're just sitting and hearing. But I'm running around doing so many things, you know, like that. Which is what happened on that evening. Actually, so many devotees were doing so many things. Srila Prabhupada just sat and heard. A very simple service. But service is absolute. But in another sense, you know, to hear from the pure devotee of the Lord is especially pleasing to Krishna when it's actually done in the right mood. In the third canto describes it, we see that Lord Kapila, he smiled at his mother when she was asking different questions. Prabhupada mentions that, you know, if you take the trouble to hear from the pure devotee, such as Srila Prabhupada, that the Lord will smile at you. You know? And Prabhupada says, if the Lord smiles at you just once, your whole life is successful. You know. So, you know, Krishna smiled at Srila Prabhupada because he stayed and he just listened. You know, the others that were there, there was half a dozen others, they were big managers and big sannyasis and what have you, so they were also, you know, sitting and listening. But in hearing, they're actually on an absolute platform. It doesn't matter what position you have, you know. You can hear as a GVC, you can hear as a, you know, a non-GVC, whatever. You know, if you hear, the importance is the same. Krishna will smile at both of you. You know, if you come and you hear from the pure devotees of the Lord, Krishna will smile at anyone. He's not thinking, oh, you know, this one, GBC, I'll pay attention to him, and this one, oh yeah, that position is here, but you know, who cares about him? Insignificant, her, insignificant. That Krishna's thing, you know, this person is hearing for my devotee, that's it. That makes that person, you know, significant, important. He will smile, you know, Krishna, which, you know, the master. Here we are in this tiny, insignificant little, you know, tiny little universe amongst millions and millions of universes, and Krishna's looking. You know, it's like, you know, there's a little speck of dust somewhere in the corner over here. None of us would notice. But, you know, from Krishna's perspective, he's looking, oh, there's a little living entity on that speck of dust, and he's, you know, here, like that. So Srila Prabhupada heard, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta then, you know, about a month later, when they went to, I think it was Allahabad or Prayag or something, I'm not sure, then they were very, you know, they went to somewhere to establish, not a temple, but I think in some building they were going to establish a centre. And then Prabhupada asked some of the people he knew within the Gaudiya Math, you know, can I take initiation? And they said, oh, we will suggest it to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta to see what he says. So, you know, all of the, so many very big, big devotees are there, and they suggested to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He said, yes, I will initiate him. I have marked him. He likes to hear. And everyone said, you know, they're looking around and said, what has he done? Who is this man? You know, what important service has he done? You know, we don't even know him. We don't see him. You know, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta has marked him as, you know, there's some significant service coming on, something very important. I'll initiate him. Okay. So, you know, therefore, we should, you know, we should be careful not to be influenced by the mode of passion in the sense that we're trying to get some benefits, either facility or fame or recognition. If we, you know, perform devotional service for the pleasure of Krishna, without, you know, desiring anything, just knowing that Krishna, that it is pleasing Krishna and his pure devotees, it's on an absolute platform. You know, then each and every service that is done, any service done around the temple, done in that way to actually plead for Krishna's pleasure, for Prabhupada's pleasure, for the deity's pleasure, for the devotee's pleasure, any service done in that mood, whatever it may be, it can be on the platform of pure devotional service, spontaneous, loving, pure devotional service, and Krishna will, you know, recognize that devotee. You know. And of course, you know, another thing that Srila Prabhupada picked up from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, his association with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Saraswati Thakur, was, you know, that the importance of the essential items of Krishna consciousness. You know, like hearing, you know, that mood to hear submissively, you know, in a non-challenging way, you know, it is the Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he was there in Vrindavan, many of the Brajavasis and, you know, big pundits, they came to hear, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta spoke on the Ishapanishad, and they're thinking, you know, oh, we'll come, you know, great Vaishnava is there, we'll hear about Radha, Krishna, Leela, and so many things. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta spoke, no, you know, if you just hear from the pure devotee, you know, that is the qualification. And if you do that in such a way that the pure devotee is pleased, the Krishna is pleased, all realization will come. You don't have to sit there and make a show of discussing, you know, it's actually a useless affair to sit and talk about the pastimes of Radha Krishna, intimate pastimes, even, you know, about, it's a useless affair even to talk about, you know, sometimes the very elevated nature of pure devotees. You know, even sometimes, you know, we have to be even a little careful there. You know, sometimes different devotees would ask Srila Prabhupada about his spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada was always very a little reluctant. You know, sometimes he would just say, well, that's not for you. You know, or, you know, or he would say, you know, the main thing you understand is that, you know, he gave me the instruction to preach and to distribute books. He wouldn't say much more than that. You know, Srila Prabhupada could glorify Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, you know, unlimitedly. But, you know, there is very little value in, you know, trying to intellectually understand the position of someone like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, or even intellectually understand even the position of Srila Prabhupada. We can certainly, you know, make some honest attempt, you know, that is there. But really, unless we, you know, follow the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, that realization will not really come. And therefore we see that those who give up the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, then they fall away from their relationship with Prabhupada and ISKCON. And those who follow the rules and regulations of the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, then they become safe day after day, year after year, and by that prolonged association of hearing and purification, they get the proper realization, they get some clue to an understanding of the glories of Srila Prabhupada and their acharyas, like that. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't try to do any magical things, he didn't try to do anything, say that, oh, the previous devotees did this, but I'm going to show you my greatness, I'm going to do something more wonderful. You know, Srila Prabhupada was very happy that, they did this, and I will just do what they've asked me to do, like that. Sometimes you see this with kirtan, because devotional service can be executed in basically 81 different varieties under the modes of material nature, because, there's 9 different varieties of devotional service: hearing, chanting, shravanam, kirtanam, visvanam, like that. And each one of those can be influenced by one of the modes of material nature. So you can actually chant influenced by tamaguna, you can chant influenced by rajaguna, you can have kirtan influenced by sattvaguna. If someone wants to have kirtan and there's an influence of rajaguna, then they may want to be a little attention, special attention for themselves. Srila Prabhupada's mood in chanting is that, let the holy name be glorified. Let us take the opportunity to glorify the holy name. I am the vehicle, I will beat on the drum and I will let my voice call out loudly, as strong as I can, so that people will hear the holy name. And he would chant the holy name in such a way that other people could follow. Prabhupada was one of the most expert musicians, you'll ever find. His madanga playing, you hear Srila Prabhupada's madanga and your heart just starts dancing, And his, harmonium, and, the ragas he knew, and the different tunes and what have you. But although he was so expert, trained from very birth, when he chanted Hare Krishna, he chanted so other people could follow him. As the main, he chanted so it was, certainly in an appealing way, and that would attract people, and in a way that people could follow. And so that when they would chant, because how can people realize the holy name to some degree? The more they chant, the more they get a taste. Kirtan can sometimes be done like that. So and so has this tune, you're waiting to see my tune. So there can be a bit of a competition until it gets to the point no one can sing anymore because, the tune is so wild and wonderful. We're thinking, right, what happened there? So, but, chanting, all the different services can be performed under the modes of material nature. But Srila Prabhupada, as expert as he was, what he did was he chanted in such a way that anyone listened and thought, oh, I can do that. One of the things I've noticed actually, because there are a lot of very expert devotees chanting. I used to chant all the time, there's an opportunity for kirtan, I used to chant. And now I'm sort of a bit embarrassed, I'm thinking, gee, I can't play madanga like that, I can't play kartals like that, I'm one of the old school units. And I can't sing like that, and I'm thinking, I'm a bit embarrassed to, ask if I can have a swap to chant. And you know, sometimes I do ask and they say, oh, it's all filled up. I mean, so, you know, but one of the beautiful thing about Srila Prabhupada was he did things in such a way that although he was so expert, he chanced to think, I could probably do that. I could probably sing that, I could, you know, do what Prabhupada's doing, you know. So that's the way, it's like if you're teaching a child, and the child says, can you show me how to do my shoelaces up? And you go, yeah. So 2 seconds, and you know, they're like, well, you know, I can never do that. You know, you are so good, I can never do that. You know, the person is showing off their own skill. You watch me tie a knot, here's a triple bow, and you know, what have you. Prabhupada was so expert that he performed devotional service in such a simple way that anyone who would have thought, oh, I could probably chant, I could probably become a devotee, I could probably, you know, worship the deities. You know, these days, of course, when we, you know, a lot of people are putting deities in their home, which is very nice. My advice, that, you know, when I give advice, is you keep it as simple as possible. One is because it gives you more opportunity to come to the temple here and preach. You know, this is so much opportunity. You know, don't get stuck up at home, because preaching is the essence. Preaching is more important than anything. And, you know, worship the deities at home, but if you do it at the expense that you've got no time to preach, it's not as pleasing, you know, to Prabhupada or to Krishna. And the second thing is that when people come to your home, if they see you, you know, it's not, again, like the time that you later, it's not, oh, gee, I can never do that. You know, or you know, what do you do? What are those mantras and the mudras and, you know, okay. You know, it's like someone should see you worship a deity and they think, I could probably do that. I could probably do that in my home. And that's what we want. Yes, you get a picture of Krishna or of the deity, offer some incense. Because what's the main thing? The main thing is I've got some love for Krishna. So that's where we see, you know, Srila Prabhupada's selflessness. That he never ever acted in such a way as people would think, oh, you know, you're a really big expert. He acted in such a simple way that, you know, people would come along and think, yes, I can do that. So he, you know, that was his main, because he knows that, you know, the main purpose of serving is that he wants to please Krishna. And Krishna says in the Gita that one who preaches devotional service, that means, what is preaching? Preaching doesn't mean you go up to someone, you give them an ear bashing, they walk away thinking those crazy Hare Krishnas, geez, I'll never have anything to do with them. You know, preaching means that person thinks, you know, after hearing, gee, I'd like to be a devotee. I'd like to chant Hare Krishna. That's preaching. You know, it doesn't matter how philosophically, you know, a stupid person may be, or, you know, how many slogans they can quote. The goal is that, you know, preaching means that person. Therefore, sometimes Srila Prabhupada's preaching was, you know, he would talk to someone and they would, so he said, oh, it's a nice watch, you know, like that. And then there was a conversation about watches. And that was enough to, you know, develop a personal relationship, and the person would then come and chant and become devoted and take initiation. So, this is the Srila Prabhupada's, but underneath the simplicity of Srila Prabhupada's behavior, because he's acting in a very simple way, you know, just doing the basics day in, day out, because he knows as soon as you those basics slacken, that's it, you're done. Maya's got you. So Srila Prabhupada stressed that, you know, you watch me, you want to be a devotee? Just do the basics every day. You know, you chant Hare Krishna, you know, you worship the deities, you know, just the simple things, if you have some prasad, do some preaching. You do that every day, you can do that for the rest of your life. Don't become big devotee, you create some big complicated way of doing devotional service. But underneath that simplicity, it's hard to see. But those who are very close, they see. Now, you know, we know today, because we all got up, you know, Jam Astami, so most of us up till 12:30 or, you know, something like that. And some even, I don't know, some have probably not even gone to sleep. You know, then we've got to get up and then another day and function because of important festivals. Very taxing, you know. I mean, you know, my head is, you know, spinning around in there, you know. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada, he would travel to a different country, you know, constantly on the move, operating in a completely different time zone. Only sleeping for, you know, about four and a half hours a day. He would get a couple of hours of sleep at night, you know, taking rest somewhere at 11:30 or something, get up about 1 or 2 o'clock. Because in the morning he had the opportunity to, you know, translate the Bhagavatam. So he knew, you know, that's for the, you know, the concentration, the samadhi that he would have to go into, you know, make his purports, you know, nice, proper, you know, very attractive preaching tools. He had to have that just complete silence, and just him alone with the Bhagavatam Krishna. So he would, you know, get up, and then he would go on his morning walk and he would do so many things. Now, of course, Srila Prabhupada was, you know, in his late 70s and his 80s, so, you know, to physically, the lack of sleep and the amount of work and the amount of travel is extremely taxing. But, you know, the intensity of his love for Krishna, that I will please Krishna, meant that all of those things were practically, you know, whatever difficulty is there, that's insignificant, you know. In fact, there's no difficulty. The only difficulty is if I can't serve Krishna, you know, or you know, you know. But of course, when there's actually when there is a pure love for Krishna, there are no obstacles. There are no obstacles. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the third canto that if we have obstacles in our devotional service, you know, sometimes as devotees, we think, oh, you know, it's just, you know, I can't do my service. You know, it's just not possible. I can't do my service. That's it. It's just not going to be possible. When we get to that, that means we're influenced by the modes of material nature. It's either tamas, rajas, or even sattva, you know. Only when there's no influence of the modes of material nature, then the devotional service is spontaneously flowing without interruption, just as the Ganges flows down towards the sea. There's nothing can obstruct it, there's no interruption, it just spontaneously flows in that one direction like that. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada gave us the formula that how can we come to that state of Krishna consciousness, which is this, that is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. He didn't want, you know, a movement of people, neophyte devotees, expanding the movement unlimitedly. So many neophyte devotees filled with the modes of tamas and rajas and patna and goodness, doing devotional service and never tasting that, you know, spontaneous, you know, pure platform of devotional service. As far as Prabhupada was concerned, if that was, you know, the state of the movement, then the movement was actually a failure. Srila Prabhupada would prefer, you know, even if there were no temples no facility, but he would prefer to sit down with one sincere disciple under a tree and, you know, hear and chant with that one sincere disciple who actually wants to come to the platform of pure devotional service. And he would consider that a success. You know, many occasions he stated that. You know, just one pure devotee. That is the real success. If you can make one pure devotee, if you can go back to Godhead, you know, that is the real success. What is the formula for Shiva? Because Shiva Prabhupada is so, you know, very powerful in his devotional service, so very compassionate, that he created many, many such pure devotees in our movement. And his formula is that we have to rise above the most material nature. The spiritual master gradually gets one to, you know, become, rise above the modes of ignorance that may be influencing even the way they serve Krishna, rise above the modes of passion, rise above even the mode of goodness. What is the mode of goodness? That one wants to be, you know, purified of suffering and, you know, purified of reactions and become liberated and peaceful and happy. You know, so sometimes devotees may rise above tamas and rajas, and they get to, you know, there's some, the performing devotional service, but there's some sattva that I'm happy to just cruise along now, I'm feeling happy, at, you know, my life is sweet, you know, like that. And, yeah. So, actually, Srila Prabhupada, he could have had that. He could have just stayed in Vrindavan. Oh, life is sweet, you know, you've got that nice, you know, beautiful place in Vrindavan, by the bank of the Jamuna, and, you know, Jiva Goswami. He could have just stayed there, you know. That's devotional service in one sense, you know, influenced by it. There's some sattva. Yeah, I'm liberated. I'm going back to God. I'll be okay about that. You know, my salvation is guaranteed. What does Srila Prabhupada do? I don't care, you know, about my own happiness, my own personal comforts. Let me suffer. You know, and he went to, you know, he travelled on the, you know, Jaladuta ship, you know, having heart attacks on the way. And, you know, lands in Boston and, you know, America amongst, you know, so many people. Very, very difficult circumstances, extremely difficult circumstances. And then, you know, went to Russia and Tehran and, you know, was prepared to risk his life in so many different circumstances. You know, he never considered performing devotional service in such a way that, yeah, my life is sweet. Of course, Krishna reciprocates with the devotees. Krishna, you know, will, when a devotee is that surrendered to Krishna, Krishna will actually look after that devotee, you know. But the devotee is not trying to, you know, look after himself like that. So, Srila Prabhupada gives us the formula that we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, associate with devotees. Associate with devotees means associate with devotees who are going to help us rise above the most material nature. That means sometimes you want to associate with a devotee who says, Prabhu, I think your devotional service might be a little influenced by passion or, you know, tamas, and, you know, you could sort of work on that a little bit, and, you know, do you know that the way that you're doing this may not be, you know, there's a slightly better way that, you know, we can work towards like this. You want to associate with devotees, not that you're associating with devotees who are in the same modes of material nature, and it's a mutual admiration society where you're both patting each other on the back that, yes, you know, you got this, we both got these sort of qualities, and, you know, we're happy and we're just stuff like that. You know. You want to associate with the devotees means you associate with people who are actually going to, they can see very clearly, you know, what are the modes of material nature, and they're going to, they're working on it themselves, of course, and they're also helping, you know, to rise above those modes, come to the pure devotional platform. And when there's no attraction to enjoy the material world, either through tamas, through rajas, through sattva, and one's only motivation is, I'm going to do service today, and my only motivation is just, is Srila Prabhupada will be happy, Krishna will be happy, the charity will be happy, the devotees will be happy. That's the how we develop that mood of pure devotional service. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, don't act in such a way that you will see Krishna. When we're influenced by the modes of nature, we act in such a way that, you know, we will see Krishna. Yeah. You know, I'm reading this book, it's all about the gopis and Krishna. I will find Krishna in the 10th canto. Prabhupada said, Bhaktisiddhanta said, you act in such a way that Krishna will see you. That just like Srila Prabhupada, he's sitting, he's listening to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Krishna is looking at him. Srila Prabhupada is preaching Krishna consciousness in such a way that it makes it so easy, you know, for someone to come to Krishna consciousness. That preaching, Krishna is looking like that. So in this way, we can, you know, follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada has made it very, very easy for us. And if we follow that easy process and show others that yes, devotional service can be very easy, let's not make it complicated for them. I remember one time I was at a Sunday feast, and it was one Bhaktin, and we were sitting with some guests, and they asked something about, what do you do as devotees? Oh, we follow very strictly four regular principles, no other success, no intoxication, no gambling. And the person, of course, is the first time the person has ever been there, it's like, oh, you know. But, you know, she was showing off, you know, we're big devotees. That's how we, you know, that's what we do. Chant 16, we get up early. And the person's just thinking, you know, there's no way I can ever do that, you know. So, as devotees, it doesn't make you a lesser devotee to do something very simply on a daily basis. It actually means that you're following Srila Prabhupada. And it, conversely, it doesn't make you actually a big devotee to be doing some so-called big service and doing something differently to Prabhupada's mood. So, in this way, if we follow this method, we will taste the same, you know, pure love that Srila Prabhupada tastes, and when we taste that, then we will understand a little bit about the glories of Srila Prabhupada more. I'm just going to leave it there. If anyone has any comments or questions. Who's putting that pressure?
Let's say, like, you have the deity worship classes where you say that how they should be worshipped. Now, when you're saying keep it simple, can you give an idea of what you mean by simple? Because deity worship does sometimes people feel that, oh, this is too much, I can't do it.
You know, quite often I would ask the Prabhupada, about deity worship even in the temples, and he would say sometimes a couple of statements like, the main thing is to, everything should be, very, very clean and punctual. That's it. That was the sum and substance of his, discussion on deity worship even in the temple. Of course, he understood that there would be further instruction, but the beauty of that instruction is that from the very beginning we understand what's most important. And sometimes if we hear too much elaborate detail on deity worship, instructions like cleanliness and punctuality can be just one of many, 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 many different instructions, and they lose their real significance. So Srila Prabhupada would highlight, very clean and punctual like that. And follow the laws and regulations. That's how we worship the deities. We chant Hare Krishna.
That's like
the
temple.
What to speak at home?
No,
punctual means, for instance, punctual at home means, worship the deities in the morning. But like 8 o'clock at night or something. regularly, you know. So, you know, every day you might do one offering of food, a main offering, of course you offer all the food, but sometimes you don't cook after the first meal, according to what you're doing. But, you know, in the morning you'll always offer one, you know, and it'll be done in the morning. So, you know, you regulate it, you're punctual like that. Because, you know, the standard of the temple is a lot more punctual and what have you. But, you know, yes, as Vedic Priya is saying, that regulated. And,
like, for example, today, when we had to come from Amaravati to the temple, the deities were woken up, they were offered fruits and milk. The normal aarti was not done.
Yeah.
In fact, we have seen the aarti here.
Yeah. Well, you should understand that one of your main services to the deities is preaching. Well, one of the main services that we do for the deities is to preach Krishna consciousness. And, you know, if, you know, sometimes, in order to preach Krishna consciousness, something we may do at home for the deities, we can sometimes do as like a mentally, you know, offer within our mind at that particular time, which doesn't take very long, and you know, we shouldn't sort of become lazy if we don't have some other more significant service to do, you know. But if we're preaching Krishna consciousness, and therefore we might just you know, mentally worship the deities, or you know, do something a little bit more simply, but still it's regulated and what have you, that's fine. You know, if we think our service to the deities just offering the incense and the ghee and some food, you know, they're very preliminary. The real service we do is preaching. That is the main service we do. We preach and we chant Hare Krishna. We chant Hare Krishna and we teach people to chant Hare Krishna. That's the main service we do for the deities. So, you know, in that preaching we should be you know, regulated. That means every day we do some preaching. You know, if a devotee is very expert and, you know, after you know, they're able to maintain a, you know, they want to do more for their deities and as far as more elaborate and what have you, and at the same time they're still able to preach, you know, a lot and look after their family, there's no harm in that, of course. It's not that we shouldn't, you know, worship the deities more elaborately at home, or, but as a general rule, it's better to keep things as simple as possible, because you know, you're pretty much sure that you're going to be able to worship those deities for the rest of your life, and not at some stage give it up. Or, you know, then the children, you know, then we die, and then we want the children to be able to think, well, you know, I saw mum and dad do this simple thing, and you know, you don't want the children thinking, oh, you know, mum and dad are worshiping the deities, and you know, when they pass away, you know, there's no way that I'm going to be able to do that. So, you know, again, it's a good policy to just keep it simple for preaching, and so that it just continues generation after generation. And it attracts people, that people think, yes, I can do that as well. And the other thing is, when we keep deity worship simple, we're able to impress upon people that the main thing is chanting. Because what I see is that in some, you know, I've seen in some of the devotees, their homes, their deity worship becomes so elaborate that when they have a program, the chanting is insignificant. It's you know, you'd almost miss the fact that we're a movement of, you know, people who chant Hare Krishna. And in one sense, you're actually misguiding people. And then I've seen those same persons struggle to keep up that deity worship. That is one of the main features of keeping deity worship. I mean, even our deity worship at the temple, one of the main things that we do is we chant Hare Krishna, we distribute prasad. You know, so many times, actually, you see that sometimes, you know, there are many artis, which previously was almost unheard of, but you can come to the temple sometimes, you see the deity worship going on, but there's no kirtan. Actually, all the acharyas say that every service should be accompanied by kirtan. The main part of worshipping the deities is there should be kirtan. Actually, yesterday we worshipped we did the Abhishek, and it wasn't even possible to have a kirtan. And I said, I'm not bringing Radha Krishna in unless there's a kirtan. The people were lining up, they would come through that room for 30, 40 minutes. The main thing, there should have been kirtan. There's kartals, mandangas, someone who can chant Hare Krishna. Not that, the mistake was that, the Abhishek, that's the main thing going on. We're doing the Abhishek to attract people to chant Hare Krishna. Really, we want people to chant Hare Krishna. We don't necessarily want them to get a deity of Radha Krishna, take it home and start bathing in many different substances. They can do that ultimately. We want them to come to the Hare Krishna temple and learn the most simple thing, because, we say to people, chant Hare Krishna, and they go, oh, it's too hard. They're not going to do an Abhishek at home. They're struggling just to chant Hare Krishna, each day, just for 5 minutes. People are so fallen. So when they come to the Hare Krishna, everything we do is to help people chant Hare Krishna like that. And if we get them to chant Hare Krishna, that in itself is a miracle. And again, that's the glory of Srila Prabhupada. Everything he did was like that, to get people to chant Hare Krishna. And therefore we're different from so many other movements, who may be so much more wonderful in the way that they do yajnas and deity worship and mantras and so many things. We purposely do things simply. Not that the devotees, Srila Prabhupada was expert in all these matters, but he purposely kept it simple because he wants people just to chant Hare Krishna, because practically people are so fallen that the most simple thing, to waggle the tongue and take a few breaths and vibrate and say Hare Krishna, it's so hard for them. Whether in the home or the temple, it's the same principle. We actually want to try and get people to have prasad and chant Hare Krishna and all our services like that. And therefore Prabhupada's purports. Some devotees, they read Prabhupada's but he's preaching so simply, I want some high philosophy and raga marga. Srila Prabhupada's purposely, and then he's saying to his disciples, you write books also. So he's making sure that we can, read the books and also continue to write books, because he's shown us, just preach simply according to your realization. Just make sure that you're following the Sampradaya's conclusions. That's the hard thing, the vocabulary and everything like that. For people to actually just follow the previous acharya is impossible. Even amongst devotees, as we say, because of the mode of ignorance, passion. Prabhupada calls it separatist. When one's influenced by the modes of material nature, it's a separatist mentality. Separate mentality means Prabhupada wants to do something in this way, and we're thinking, we'll do it in this more difficult way. Then I'll get recognition for doing something even more wonderful than Prabhupada. Better actually do a Prabhupada. That's so very difficult. extremely hard to do, just to, because why is it so difficult? Because we have to put it aside that you know, I'm not doing it for fame, for glorification, for anything, for this or that. I'm doing this simple service because Prabhupada wants me to do it. To do that, you actually have to put aside all your false ego. But if you do that, Krishna and Srila Prabhupada will, you know, just, you know, give you so much mercy for doing what they want. Like that. So, yeah. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, yeah, look, if the purification comes, if we, as it describes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that by rendering service to the pure devotees, and regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart, and those that, you know, tamas, rajas, etc., very quickly becomes removed. Krishna acts within the heart to remove that. So, if a devotee tries to hear from Srila Prabhupada and understand, you know, what his instructions are, what his mood is, and then tries to act upon those instructions, Krishna will very, very quickly purify. That process is extremely powerful. That devotee will be very quickly purified. Krishna will act within their heart, give them so much help. You know, a very, very powerful process. And if we do something different, even though we're doing massive amounts of devotional service for many, many years, it's actually not as potent. But, you know, it's a very simple process.
But even that hearing,
yeah,
and preaching or chanting, that can be also influenced by more passion and
ignorance. Not if, yeah. Look, if we're, you only have to be a devotee for a day, and pretty much you should pick up that we're doing things for Krishna's pleasure. Even we may have so much contamination of modes, you know, we definitely do. But we hear from a devotee that despite all the separatist things that we want to do, we're going to put that aside and we're going to do something just so that Prabhupada is happy. And Krishna says, Sarvadaman Parityagya, that if you surrender unto me, you have so much karma, which means you are so implicated in the modes of material nature, I will remove all that. I will protect you from all of that. That's what that sloka means. So otherwise, you know, if we hear from the very beginning, from the very first day we're devoted, oh, we do everything to please Krishna, we do everything to please, you know, it's a simple statement. You can tell a 3 or 4 year old child that, you know, why are you doing that, Daddy? Because I'm doing it to make Krishna happy, I'm not so. A little child can understand that. As a devotee, we come along, we'll hear that in about 10 minutes. And then if we decide, yes, I want to do that, if we try, Krishna will actually protect us from the, you know, modes of material nature. And that's what that sloka means.
Taking reference to your friend who dropped you off,
yes.
So, you imagine, you know, some...
That means that he wasn't doing things for Krishna's pleasure or Prabhupada's pleasure.
But
he was doing, yes.
You are really Hindu, right? Right? Then it's not good. But he's friend.
Yes.
Check it.
Yes. So that's our individual choice. You know, if we choose to serve Krishna in that way, then Krishna will allow us to do that. He will give us, you know, he will give us the ability, the realization, the strength. You know, sometimes, for instance, you know, we think that, oh, how's Krishna going to do that? you know, he gives you association. So sometimes we may have, oh, I want to do it this way. That's what I'm saying. You associate with the devotee who's actually in that mood. So you're with the devotee, and that devotee is doing all sorts of nice things for Krishna's pleasure, for the pleasure of Prabhupada, and you just get swept up in it, even though you may have so many other desires. And if you just hang around long enough with devotees who are on that level, you'll develop that nature as well. You know, we don't have the strength individually, but if you're with a group, therefore, you know, we have sankirtan. That's the sankirtan movement. That's why we call it the sankirtan. Individually, we're just absorbed in the modes of material nature. You come together as a group, and you get that strength. No, I'm going to, you know, chant, you know, like that, for Krishna's pleasure, for Prabhupada's pleasure. So, you know, it's that association, especially with. And then, you know, Krishna rewards you, he gives you so much nice prasadam, you know, you do some little bit of service, and even maybe a little contaminated, and Krishna gives you so much reward, you think, Krishna is so kind to me, you know, I just made a tiny little effort for Krishna, and he's given me so much. That pushes you on, you know. And sometimes Krishna gives you a little pinch, you know, a little suffering, and that pushes you. Krishna has so many, he's very tricky. He knows, you know, if you want to make that choice, yes, I'd like to just serve just for Prabhupada's pleasure, just for Gurudev's pleasure, just for you know, Krishna's pleasure. Krishna will protect you from all the sinful reactions which manifest as being implicated in the most material nature. But if we decide, you know, if we're not serious like that, or sincere, that's what Prabhupada would say. If you're sincere, that's what Prabhupada says, sincere, yes. Sincere means I have one desire, I want to try and please Prabhupada and Krishna, even though I'm completely unqualified to do it. But I want to do it. Insincere means I want to make a show that I'm doing things with Krishna and Prabhupada, but really, I want to look after myself. You know, so there's two things going on like that. That's insincere. But if we just have that sincere desire and we think, I'm so unqualified, I'm so conditioned by the lower modes of material nature, but if we have that, Krishna will actually make so many arrangements that immediately we can, and therefore a devotee will, you know, in the course of a year or two, you know, they'll actually come to a very nice platform of devotional service. Any other questions or comments?
Is there anything like good envy and
a
bad envy?
Good envy and a bad envy. Yeah.
Because envy there is in Vaikuntha also.
Is there? I spent so long in the material world, I've forgotten it. Yeah, look, in some statements, Srila Prabhupada says that, you know, envy is the one quality that's not in the spiritual world, you know. Then sometimes he does say that even you know, that can be utilized, you know, in the service of Krishna, you know, in a very few. But, you know, there, what we've got to consider is this. First get the basics right, and then, you know, sometimes we try and, you know, utilize some of the easier qualities in the service of Krishna, and then, you know, which are, and then other, you know, qualities such as envy, which are practically, we should never go near, they're so dangerous. You know, if we become to be a Nitya Siddha devotee, and we can understand exactly how Radharani, maybe little envious, you know, Radharani and Chandravali may have some, you know,
competition.
Yes. Then, you know, you might try to dabble with a little bit of envy in your devotional service, but if we try to imitate very advanced devotees, most likely what will happen is we'll be just completely, that envy will just completely absorb, you know, will be swallowed up in that envy. Oh, I'm using envy in devotional service like that. I will become swallowed up. Actually, I had this, one time I had this dream that there was this, like a witch appeared in my dream. And she was attacking people and killing them, you know. Really, really wild. And, you know, she... Then this man came along, and he quickly grabbed this witch, and he just sort of, you know, controlled it like that. And I looked, and I thought, gee, that it was so easy, you know, what he did, it was so easy. I thought, I could probably do that. And so I grabbed her and thought, oh, I'll keep. And then within 2 seconds, she had me, and I was in the grips of death. She was just going to kill me, you know. And then this man again, he grabbed this witch and took her away. And then when I looked closely at that man, it was my spiritual master. And you know, when I woke up, I realized, you know, like dealing with Maya, you have your generals, you know, each has, you know, right down. So without our generals, such as Srila Prabhupada, you know, we're defenseless. You know, he is a great master. Maya, you know, she cannot touch Srila Prabhupada. In fact, you know, she's in awe of Srila Prabhupada. She's, you know, serving Srila Prabhupada. But if we try to, you know, so we can follow what Srila Prabhupada wants us to follow. But, you know, there are some things that we shouldn't imitate. You know, we try to get up at, 1:30 at night after 2 hours sleep. And we do that every night. And, you know, we'll go crazy. We'll come to the temple and start yelling at people. Some will say, oh, can you pass me that flower? And we'll start screaming at them. And, you know, so, because, you know, we have that, like, we can't, something, so envy, you know, Prabhupada says, Hanuman used his anger in the service of the Lord and Arjuna, but we can't imitate, Hanuman, who goes setting fire to, you know, the demons and like that. So envy is like that. Don't touch it, don't go near it, unless you're, you know, actually very, very elevated in your devotional service. Otherwise, you'll actually be completely entangled in it. Yeah. Don't play with mine.
That's a good application.
That, you know,
I meant it that way.
Yeah, someone is, you know, but again, be a little careful. We should still be careful in how we compare ourselves with other devotees. But you know, you can do like that. That devotee is doing so nicely, and let me try to, you know, do something nicely also. Srila Prabhupada mentions the same example. But be a little careful in comparing ourselves with other devotees, because you can get into that, you know, a sticky situation. It's very tricky. Most of, you know, you see devotees who dabble with envy, they don't really use it so well in Krishna service. Most of them get caught up in some bitter relationship with someone. All right. Hare Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada.